Hey folks, this is To Know the Land, broadcasting from the treaty territories of the Mississauga of the Credit on 93.3 FM at the University of Guelph. Maybe you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen to your podcasts. It's a show about our connections with the land base, how we interact with the land, how we learn about the land, how we defend the land. My name is Byron, and today I wanted to talk about turkey tail, Termites versicolor. It's a really common fungi that you see a lot in the forest, growing on the sides of trees. And I want to talk about how to notice it in the woods, some of the species I've noticed it on, and why someone might harvest it, what it might be beneficial for our bodies as well. It's a bit of a species profile, but also trying to learn a little bit more about medicinal uses of mushrooms outside of maybe psychoactive qualities. Because that's important. That's a very important medicinal aspect. It's doing a lot of research right now for a lot of different things, you know, specifically the psilocybin mushrooms. But that's not my focus today. My focus is learning about immune-boosting mushrooms, things that can support people through sickness or in recovery. And one of those top mushrooms, as far as I know, is turkey tail. So I just wanted to dive a little bit more into that. You've probably seen the turkey tail before. It's a very common fungi growing on the sides of a tree in a shelf-like form. And it's got different colors. And yeah, its scientific name, Termites versicolor. Termites is the genus, the big group that it's a part of, all similar species. And versicolor means it comes in a variety of colors. And I have seen beautiful blue with stripes and brown with stripes. It always has stripes. They're zoned in different colors. And sometimes in those descriptions of the fungi, they'll describe them as zonate, meaning that there's almost these concentric rings, although it's not a whole circular cap, so it's just sort of half the cap, and you get these big lines of color going through them, around them. I'm going to read a description of them because I think it'll do a better job than I ever could. And again, this is from a book I've read from often on the show, the National Audubon Society Mushrooms of North America. It came out earlier this year. It's pretty good, and I like how it puts things simply. So this is a brief description of them. Ubiquitous on wood through North America, Termites versicolor is recognized by the somewhat small, very thin, strongly and meticulously zonate caps. The most characteristic cap colors are dark bluish grays, followed by golds, dark browns, and reddish browns, and usually with a white to cream margin. But almost any color can appear. When fresh, the cap is thinly fuzzy. It becomes silky or almost bare, usually with some zones more textured than others. The pores are unremarkable, round and angular and white to cream colored. I'm going to interrupt, as I always do, and describe that the pores on the bottom are kind of hard to see unless you're using a field lens, and you want to find those pores because there are other mushrooms that look similar that do not have pores in those same ways. So you want to look for those pores in the bottom and you want to see them. That's all. And if you get a mistake, it's a lot of Termites look similar, sort of, but it's very unlikely that you'll mistake it for something noxious or poisonous. Very, very unlikely. Growth habit. Several to many to a few hundred, overlapping and fusing, often forming short rosette-like stacks when on top of the wood. I see them growing often in shelves along the side of a trunk, all the way around the trunk. The cap is fan-shaped or semicircular, shallowly convex, becoming flat or shallowly concave, with a thin, sharp, often wavy or ruffled margin, 2 to 7 centimeters wide, and 2 to 7 millimeters thick near the base. The pores are round to angular, a few or many, but not most, elongated and twisting. not neatly arranged, 3 to 5 per millimeter, white to cream colored, sometimes becoming light yellowish or light brownish with age, often becoming torn with age. The flesh is thin, tough, flexible, whitish. The smell is mild to sweet or fragrant. The spores are white. Habitat on dead hardwood, occasionally conifer material, from sticks to logs to stumps. The range is throughout North America, season December to March on the West Coast, but in my region, October or March to October, it can be found persisting out of season. So it's still there now, and because the season's been so warm, I imagine it'll persist for quite a bit longer. Lookalikes are Termites ochraceae, which is similar but much more limited color range, orange to brown to white, and has thicker caps and is less commonly found. Termites hirsuta, which has a conspicuously fuzzy cap in white and brown zones and rarely produces more than several brackets at once. Styrium lobatum, and other related species can look nearly identical on top, but have no pores whatsoever on the underside. That one they sometimes call false turkey tail. But yeah, look for those pores. That's how you tell the difference. Serena unicolor has a maze-like or neatly toothed surface on the underside and has few or no distinct pores. And its conservation status, like is it rare, is it at risk? It's ubiquitous. And it is. Turkey tail is everywhere. It is one of the most common fungi I see around. And because of that, I figure we should know this fungi well. We should know it inside and out. So that was the entry for Mushrooms of North America in the National Audubon Society, published in 2023, for Termites versicolor. And today when I was out for a walk, I've been stuck at home, not feeling so well. And I went out for a walk, and I went to one of my favorite spots. And while I was there, I kept seeing turkey tail. I kept seeing it everywhere. And I remembered that turkey tail is an immune-boosting mush or fungi. It's not a mushroom. It's more like a scale or bracket fungi. Polypores, some people call them. And this, I see it everywhere, and I was like, oh, that's good for immune systems. But how? I was wondering, but how? So I remembered that there were some books I have that describe, I've talked about these books or I've read from them before, and describe some of the medicinal values of Termites versicolor. So I thought I would like to read from those when I get home. But when I was out in the woods today, I was in a forest. It's old maples, some young beech, some of the older beech, but a lot of beech scale, and they're dying back. A lot of white ash, which is also dying back because of the emerald ash borer. There's some hop hornbeams in there. Some hemlocks sparsely found throughout. It's a nice, beautiful forest. It's getting older. It's pretty old as it is also, but it's all owned by developers and slated to be destroyed. So when I was out there and thinking I'd like to harvest some of these, even if they're so ubiquitous, you still have to wonder, will this harvesting affect this forest at all? And, you know, in the short term it may, but in the long term that forest sadly won't be there. So make use while it's there, get to know these plants, build these relationships up. I used to be very frustrated with anybody who you asked, like, oh, what can I use it for? What can I use it for? Can I eat it? And I think I had to take some time and really look at what does that mean? What are people asking when they're always asking, what can I use it for? What can I use it for? Is it always extractive? And I think it is. I think that framework is extractive. But what I think the deeper question that people are getting at when they're asking that question is, how can I relate with this being? How can I interact with this being? what are the things that, how does it affect my body? How may I affect its body? How are we in relationship? And I think that's what people are asking. How are we in relationship? And for me, remembering that framework when looking at another being helps me feel less extractive and changes the framework in how I think about it. So it isn't so extractive, you know? It changes how I think because of how I say it. And how I say it reforms that relationship, which is nice. So I'm going to remind myself, and I'm going to remind all of you as I do my students, that, you know, I wanted to know, how can I be in relationship with this fungi? I can observe it and feel joy from the beauty and the familiarity. I can see how they interact with other species in their environment, growing on the dead ash trees. And I get an understanding. It's like, okay, these are helping break down the ash trees. They create a white rot in the ash trees. And I think I've talked about white rot versus brown rot on the show before, but they create a white rot, which helps break down the lignin, which, you know, fungi are the only things on Earth that can break down lignin. So that's great. This fungi is doing its job there. But again, how can I be in relationship with this fungi? So that was important to me. So I wanted to learn about that. And through the process of supporting my immune system is one way that I can be in relationship with that fungi. So I wanted to read from Polypores and Similar Fungi of Eastern and Central North America by Alan and Diana, Alan and Arlene Bessett and Diana G. Smith. This is the University of Texas Press. These are great books. These are just great books. They're expensive, but they're good. But if you can find your way to one, it's well worth it. At the back of this, it has some some essays, short essays on different medicinal uses of fungi. And that's not what the book is about. The book is about identification. It's not a field guide. It's a huge hardcover. It's beautiful. But here's the section on Tremedia versicolor. And I'm going to say it's pretty detailed and pretty thick and a little bit technical. Japanese researchers have discovered two interesting substances derived from turkey tail, PSP, which is polysaccharide peptide, and PSK, polysaccharide crestin. These are believed to function as immunomodulatory stimulants. Results from several small human trials suggest that these compounds may have extended the survival rate of victims of gastric cancer over a three-year period by 40%, and of colorectal and breast cancer patients by 9% over a five-year period. If these results are consistent, then this is a significant result. The polysaccharides in Tremedia versicolor do not kill cancer cells. The PSK in Tremedia versicolor does not work for esophageal or cervical uterine cancers. In some cases, it may stimulate mutations. PSP has no cytotoxic effect on mice, mouse lines of hepatoma, sarcoma, melanoma, placental choriocarcinoma, or breast cancer. Nor can they clear the arteries of clogging cholesterol or modulate glucose levels. PSP, however, protect healthy mice from the effects of whole body irradiation. One study demonstrated that PSP stimulated the immune system to offer more protection for mice with tumors who didn't undergo radiation compared with those that did. The addition of PSP with radiation actually led to the growth of larger tumors. Bum, bum, bum. Turkey tail extract may have antiviral effects, as it seems to reproduce the frequency or seems to reduce the frequency of herpes simplex outbreaks. It appears to ameliorate the side effects of cancer radiation and chemotherapy when used as an adjunct therapy by strengthening the immune system following treatment. So that's from Polypores and Similar Fungi of Eastern and Central North America by Alan and Arlene Bessett with Diana G. Smith on University of Texas Press. And then there's another book that I've recently been looking at. I've had it in the house for a while. Got it for my partner, but I haven't looked at it till recently because I wanted to learn more about medicinal use of fungi. And it's called Medicinal Mushrooms, The Essential Guide by Christopher Hobbs. And it's out on Story Press. And this book is really good, really thorough, offers a lot. And the papers that he cites at the back, it's thorough citations, a big bibliography. So if you want to learn more. And it describes turkey tail as one of the most beneficial, healthful fungi out there. It says it provides, it's good at preventing and treating infections and inflammation of the upper respiratory, urinary, and digestive tracts. It's immunomodulating, antiviral for hepatitis, immune support during chemotherapy, radiation, alleviating side effects, cancer prevention, and cholesterol regulating. So some of those claims, I would say, run counter to that first book. So I want to say, as always, do your research. I'm not a medical professional. I like learning about nature. I don't know how everything works in the body, but I am interested in understanding different perspectives on how different things in nature can support us. I know tons of things about how different things in nature can harm us. I've had many shows on hazards and toxic plants and fungi in the past. And here's an opportunity to look at some possibilities of ways that they can help us, how they can support us. But I want to name that I'm only using a few resources. And one of the resources, he is the main author, Alan E. Bessett, is a fungal, like, taxonomist. He looks at the taxonomy of fungi. He is also not a medical doctor. And Christopher Hobbs, who wrote this one, is also not a medical doctor. But these are people who studied their craft for a long time, studied their fields for a long time, and probably have a lot to offer. And like with anything on Earth, we have to learn through experience of others and ask questions and learn that way. So I'm not saying or endorsing these, but I want to say that here we are. You're participating by listening and hopefully writing and asking questions or whatever. And here we are learning about this from two different perspectives together. So what Christopher Hobbs does say, the summary of research findings. Of all the mushrooms used today for their medicinal qualities, more research has been performed on this species than on any other fungus, or rather the crude extracts high in beta-glucans, PSK and PSP. What makes it medicinal? The beta-glucans. The particular beta-glucans found in turkey tail have been studied in human clinical trials for their demonstrated ability to activate our immune response against cancer, viruses, and other pathogens. Although we know a lot about turkey tail and its active beta-glucans, further research is ongoing to better clarify the preferred way to grow mycelium or fruiting bodies to optimize their potent beta-glucans, their terpenes, and other active compounds, and how to best process them to make the most effective extracts for the manufacture of dietary supplements. These studies will bring additional clarity about how to use them to their best advantage for prevention and to promote wellness for maximum immune and anti-cancer effects. The PSK extract. The most highly researched turkey tail concentrate is polysaccharide crestin. Numerous lab tests and animal studies show that PSK can enhance immune functions in profound ways. PSK also has antiviral and cholesterol regulating effects, among other beneficial biological activities. PSK is reported to contain 62% polysaccharides, non-starch alpha and beta glucans, and 38% protein. PSK, or polysaccharide peptide, PSP, its Chinese counterpart, was used in nearly all of the clinical trials using turkey tail. PSK was developed in Japan and PSP in China from different strains of Tremedes versicolor. These expensive commercial products from Asia apparently only have recently become available in the United States. It's not clear if what is being offered is made exactly like the original products used in the clinical studies, but likely they are not. Companies selling PSP or PSK turkey tail products must have documentation that the strain used is COV-1 or polysaccharide K, and that the mycelium was grown in liquid culture and not on other solid media, which could contain significant levels of starch. PSK was first approved by the Japanese Ministry for the Treatment of Cancer in 1977, and in 1987 accounted for 25.2% of the national expenditure for anti-cancer agents. PSK is given orally, often 3 to 6 grams a day, along with several different chemotherapy protocols. Some of the clinical trials performed with PSK demonstrate improved quality of life after surgery in patients taking turkey tail with chemotherapy. In some studies, it's associated with extended 5 to 10 year survival rates, especially for colorectal and stomach cancers. Turkey tail extract appears to decrease nausea, improve immune function, and boost energy levels, counteracting some of the major side effects of chemotherapy. So this is in the context of cancer. Generally, it's also believed or considered that turkey tail helps support the immune system generally. It boosts the immune system. And what this has to say is, the book says, studies show the well-researched commercial products PSK and PSP have broad spectrum of multifunctional immunological effects, some of which might be triggered through contact with immune tissue in the digestive tract. In these products, mushroom cell wall components like beta-glucans and chitin, as well as others, have complex interactions with our body's immune sensors, such as toll-like receptors in the small intestine, as the turkey tail cell walls are processed and passed through our body. After fungal beta-glucans are recognized by our body, a complex immune response takes place that leads to cancer and tumor cell suppression and greater surveillance and antibody production to identify and target potentially pathogenic viruses and bacteria. So that's some of the uses or modern research that's happening. But there's different ways of interacting with these fungi. One thing I'm curious about as well is, aside from, let me just say that was Christopher Hobbs, Medicinal Mushrooms, The Essential Guide, put out on Story Press. And Christopher Hobbs got his PhD in mycology and an herbal clinician, and he's a botanist and research scientist. So he might know a bit of his stuff. And I just want to name that it's so important to learn how we are in relationship with these other forms of life. I think it's really cool. Fungal bodies break other things down and can do amazing things. You know, I feel like anybody who's listening to this show already probably understands all that. And I just want to say it's neat that we can be involved in that relationship. We can have relationship with these fungi in different ways. But I really want to know how the turkey tail interacts with other forms of life other than humans. I've not seen much in the way of like squirrels hoarding it or stashing the fungi like they do other fungi or other mushrooms. I've not seen teeth marks on it the same way I might see a birch polypore that squirrels have been chewing on, or white-tailed deer. I have seen insects around and on the turkey tail, but I don't think they were feeding on it necessarily, maybe just alighting and then taking off again. I don't remember clearly if anyone was consuming that. So what is it? Does anybody else consume turkey tail? And I'm not saying this is an indicator that we should or could, because that's totally not true, that if another animal consumes thing that it's safe for us, because that's not true. I think we all know that. But I just want to know, what are those interactions? Who are those associations that the turkey tail has? Today, most recently, I saw the turkey tail on white ash. And I could check my files to see who else I've noted turkey tail on in the past. Perhaps my photographs are labeled or something like that. You know, in fact, while I talk to you now, I'll just quickly look up the turkey tail and see if anybody else I can recognize who the turkey tail is growing on. But I think from all these images that I have, it looks a lot like ash, a lot of ashes. And yeah, most, that's an ash as well. Oh, you know what? That might be a maple. Yeah. So it seems like ashes and maples, I've seen them growing on. But maybe that's a telling sign. And like I said, they cause white rot. And if you haven't heard me describe white rot in the past, I'm going to pull up a section in that polypores of North America, or polypores and similar fungi of Eastern and Central North America, to read about white rot fungi, because you've probably seen it before if you've been out in the woods. I'll describe two forms of fungi. There's brown rot and white rot. Brown rot, I think people remember more clearly because it stands out more. And that's the sort of cubey-looking fungi, or cubey-looking wood. When you come across an old dead tree, and it seems to have broken down into cubes or little squares, that is caused by the brown rot fungi. And what it does is it leaves the lignin behind, but it consumes the cellulose of the tree. And then the white rot fungi, which certain fungi produce the brown rot, certain fungi produce the white rot. White rot leaves these wet, stringy, long strands. And it's consuming the lignin, but these long strands of cellulose remain. And often it holds water really well, like a sponge, this leftover bit. And that's pretty memorable for me. That's what I remember. I remember being able to just dig into a log, pulling up these long strands and squishing them out, and having water drip from them. But let's read what the book says, because it probably give a better description than I could ever give. Broadly speaking, white rot fungi produces digestive enzymes capable of breaking down all three components of wood, cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin, to meet their nutritional requirements. Several types of white rot include white pocket rot, spongy white rot, stringy white rot, and heart rot. The residual material found during the late stages of white rot decay consists of cellulose fibers that remain. These fibers are typically stringy, hydrophilic, and whitish due to the bleaching of oxidation and the loss of lignin. Soft and wispy, these cellulose strands are capable of absorbing water and contributing moisture to the surrounding soil. They are unstable, however, and will eventually disappear because of decomposition activity of the soil bacteria. There is considerable interest in using white rot fungi that are capable of selectively decomposing lignin before breaking down cellulose and hemicellulose for the purposes of biopulping. The resulting components are enriched with nutrients that can serve as supplementary food for ungulates whose fungal gut microorganisms can break these down. Today, white rot fungi are the dominant type of decay fungi in dead tree wood. In fact, they are significantly more plentiful and varied than their brown rot fungal counterparts. Although they are angiosperm specialists, white rot fungi are major decomposers of dead broadleaf tree wood and conifers. In the distant geologic past, they were principal recyclers of the earliest conifers, the dominant group of trees until about 50 million years ago. Between 180 and 140 million years ago, angiosperm lineages began to take root and diversify, giving white rot fungi a novel mega niche to exploit. White rot fungi existed prior to the evolution of brown rot fungi, probably since the close of the Carboniferous period. Polypores and similar fungi of Eastern North America on the University of Texas Press by Allen and Arlene Bessett and Diane G. Smith. So we know that their role is to break things down for the trees. And we know that certain components inside the turkey tail, the Trimedes versicolor, sort of hits our lower intestine and gets us sort of like, oh, on the watch and boosting the immune system. What is it? Or pardon me, is there a theme there? Can we draw a connection between how the turkey tail gets at the trees and how the turkey tail gets at our bodies? They seem to be two different things, but I'm always curious about, is there a connection there? Is there a way, if only to tell the story better of how it works? But if not, like, is there a chemical process that affects, is our body reacting to the same chemical process that the fungi does for the trees, and our body reacts a certain way, thus boosting the immune system? I don't know. These are just questions now. Like, I have no idea. I am here learning as well. One thing I'm going to do is I'm going to try a double extraction of the turkey tail and make myself some medicine. And I'm going to try it and take it regularly. I have made medicine from fungi before. Most notably, birch polypore, Peptoporus betulinus, I think is the old name. I can't remember the new name of it. But yeah, Peptoporus betulinus or birch polypore. Someone gave me a big chunk, and so I cut it up. And first boiled it in a decoction, like a tea, a strong tea, and then kept that water to the side and then macerated it in a high-proof alcohol for a long time and then removed and strained and squished out the fungi to remove any alcohol that remained and then added a ratio of maybe must have been like less than 50-50, half tea or less than half tea, and then the rest and a majority of alcohol to keep it stabilized. And I take that tincture once in a while, and that also is an immune boosting tincture. I haven't taken it in a while. I should put on my tinctures I take on the side of the bed. How do people do that? How do they always remember to take their meds? But yeah, curious about that stuff. But yeah, I think my questions moving forward are, who else is interacting with the turkey tail? Who else appreciates the turkey tail in such a way that they consume it somehow or spread it somehow. Is there a particular species that rubs up against it and spreads their spores? Is there someone that feeds on it? Is there an interaction between the turkey tail and the emerald ash borer? If the emerald ash borer is harming the ash tree by eating up the cambium layer, and so maybe those nutrients have nowhere to go, so they stay closer to the bottom because, you know, that tree has been girdled on the inside of the bark. Does the turkey tail only grow on the lower section of bark, maybe up to about 6 feet from what I saw today? Is that because of the work of the emerald ash borer? Is that bottom section now more nutritious, more full of things like sugars, which the fungi cannot access itself or produce itself? So does it break down the wood there because those nutrients are trapped in what is now probably mostly dead wood? And this stuff, I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm just asking questions because I'm curious about how it works and why the Trimedes hangs out there. But you know what? I've also seen Trimedes on dead maple, according to my photographs, and probably from those regions where those photographs were taken, such as Mountsburg. Probably a lot of sugar maples. Does turkey tail have a sweet tooth? Does it prefer high sugar areas? Why wouldn't it grow in other maples as much? Because there are other maples that do have a lot of sugar in them. And are there more nutrients? Or is it like, do the white ash that I see them on, that the emerald ash borer are infecting, are they sweet? Is that a draw for the turkey tail? I don't know. Just wondering, just thinking aloud, wondering at what's going on out there. And that's my role in life, just to wonder. If you're wondering anything more about the show, wondering about who this weirdo is that you're listening to, you can always check out the website, toknowtheland.com. You can always email me, toknowtheland@gmail.com. There's always Instagram @toknowtheland. And those are great ways to get in touch, to get a hold of me and find out more. If you want, you can go to the website, toknowtheland.com/donate. And there's a section to support the show. I really appreciate that. That helps out. I got a new mic stand a couple of weeks ago, I think I was saying to people, and I was learning how to do a better job of speaking into the microphone without peaking too much. I hope this show doesn't turn out horrible, and I hope the audio turned out well. I think that's it. That's all. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.